Go ahead and introduce our next speaker. He's our Director of Performance and also our, as recently added duties, is our manager of our Memorial City Ironman Sports Medicine Institute physical therapy side. If he looks a little tired sometimes, we got him doing several things for us, so he's got plenty to do with research and everything else he's doing. But he also has 4 children under the age of 6, so he's got a little bit of things to do at home as well. This is Brian Duncan.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Hi, how are y'all? Thanks to Bob and Dan and Brad and everybody on the AT team for having me out. I enjoy speaking with Dr. Jones, and like you said, we've got a weightlifting safety course that hopefully will be coming to a high school or hospital near you. We're going to try and catch up a little on time, so I'm going to speed through some of this, but we're also going to have breakout sessions where we can basically get into the meat and potatoes. But talking about what we can do in the athletic training room with back pain. So we're going to talk about treatment classification. So there's not a lot of good evidence for a lot of the rehab strategies we've used for decades. So McKinsey works well for some, but not for others. And if you were taught when I was taught, there's also Williams flexion, and now there's a myriad of things in between, including spinal manipulation, which actually probably has the best evidence of anything. And so we'll talk about a bit about who those fit with, because if you can categorize your patient then and apply one of those treatment strategies, it works really well. And if you blindly apply your treatment strategies, that your outcomes aren't as good. And then we'll talk about some resources. And I didn't provide my PowerPoint going in, but I'm giving it to Bob, so it'll be on the Google Drive as well as the articles I reference. So back pain, we're going to skip some of these, but basically it happens in kids and it happens more in adults. And basically it's something that happens over time to a lot of people. There's definitely some sports with some predispositions, you know, linemen, gymnasts, divers, weightlifting. I help out some at U of H, and I've seen other high school athletes. The deadlift seems to be great at herniating discs, and the athletes at your schools are particularly at risk for that because they actually have water in their disc, and when you're my age and you're head's bald like this, you don't have much disc content in there to herniate. It's like a stale jelly donut, so you're actually probably a little less at risk for that issue. And so we're going to hit on this, kind of the 3 things that Dr. Jones highlighted: the spondylolisthesis, discogenic issues, and muscle strains. And so they can be accidental. Like Tony Romo, they can be undertrained when you sit in a flexed environment all day and your chair bounces up and down. Or they can be overtrained and you can put your spine in kind of precarious positions over and over again. And so for a lot of these athletes, we don't get to train them for these precarious positions. What we do in dance, and we don't necessarily in football. So we have to have a training regimen sufficient that we've built up enough capacity that there's some wiggle room for error. And so with spondylolisthesis, basically, anybody seen this in the weight room? So this is a good way to develop it. Anything that hyperextends the spine repeatedly, gymnastics, of course, and especially with load, a lot of times you can get away with it when it's just like somebody, like my kids will get on their hands and do kind of a back bend. But then when you add speed or you add load, then the spine starts to react. And then basically Dr. Jones showed you a similar slide. It's basically a stress reaction that progresses. So what do these people look like? Because if we can figure out what they look like, we can simply treat their impairments and kind of fix this issue. So most typically, your patients or athletes are going to look like that. So when they have a big curve in their back, right, I think of linemen when they you watch linemen try and jog off the field. We call it in physical therapy world the tail wagging the dog, right? Because they're kind of like this, right? They can't really dissociate what their hips are supposed to do, right? Your hips are supposed to push you along, and your butt shouldn't necessarily wag back and forth as it happens. And linemen are notoriously bad at doing that. So you see this kind of posture, so they're sitting in extension. Basically, your treatment strategy in general is going to have a flexion bias. So you're going to try and pull them out of that posture into a basically a neutral spine posture. So you may stretch their rectus, stretch their psoas. You may actually stretch their paraspinals, and you're going to work on them having their rib cage and their pubic bone aligned, right? So when they're out like this, their abs aren't doing much work for them. And for a lineman in particular, if you go to hit somebody and you can bench 500, well, that's great, but if your abs suck, you're going to get this big power outage, right? You're going to go to push on somebody who's moving, and you can't push with 500 pounds of force, because what's going to happen is your back, your abs are going to be your limiting factor. So the fact that you can bench press 500 pounds becomes somewhat of a moot point. And so these are some of the things that they might say. Gradual onset of pain. They might describe it diffusely across their low back. They may describe a mechanism of injury, or they may just walk in and you see their posture and you know exactly what's going on. More things that can be associated with it. Kind of like I mentioned before, the tail wagging the dog. You may do some of these tests. Please don't have them spend lots of time in that position, because that's where they live already. But if they say they don't lay on their stomach because of it hurts, or if you put them in that position and it hurts, it's good confirmation. Not necessarily that they have a spondy, but they need a flexion-biased treatment strategy. And people with a flexion bias, you need to be able to pull them into a neutral spine posture. And a lot of people, when you get quadruped, or if you ever go to a gym, you see a big dip in their back, right? And so they're just kind of wasting their time with that exercise. With that exercise, you really need to drive your fist towards the wall in front of you and your heel to the wall behind you. And a lot of times I'll balance a PVC pipe across their back so that you can see if their hips are wobbling, because if they are, they're not staying stable. Planks are great. It's a great warm-up as well. And then this is called the McGill crunch. So the problem with crunches, and it doesn't necessarily affect this treatment category, these people who need flexion, they have a hard enough time flattening out their back when they do a crunch anyway, and it's actually somewhat useful for them. For most people, flattening out your back is a terrible thing to do. We were meant to have some curve in our back, not too much and not too little. But crunches with a flat back actually probably aren't the best idea. So putting your hands underneath your spine to stabilize your lordosis is probably good. Or there's a great device called an ab mat, which is just a piece of foam that keeps your lordosis maintained. And then all you have to do is one leg is straight and one leg is bent to stabilize the pelvis, so that people aren't lifting their butt or wiggling their butt around to achieve their crunch. So anyway, it's called a McGill crunch, named after Stuart McGill, who's kind of a preeminent biomechanist on the spine. All right, so anybody seen this? Y'all ever walk through the weight room and see a bunch of that going on? And so this just runs us into all kinds of trouble. So your back muscles are slow twitch muscle fibers. So they're an endurance muscle, and they're actually not meant to create movement. They're actually meant to just hold your spine still. Your butt muscles and your hamstrings and your quads and your shoulders, they're all meant to create movement. And your spine muscles here, when the butt's tucked under, it can't do any good. It's pretty much useless. And then, so you're left lifting with your paraspinals, and eventually your disc will herniate posteriorly if you're young enough. If you're old enough, you might be able to get away with it. So we'll talk in our breakout session about how to coach kids away from that, either to prevent this from happening or once it's happened as part of the rehab process. So the other thing that can happen is you can end up with bone edema. So you can actually, by overloading the spine, you can actually cause issues of the vertebrae and of the disc. People like swimmers, typically, people who aren't used to being in gravity environments, maybe endurance runners, athletes that tend towards having no butt. Some of that's genetic, but a lot of it, a lot of it is adopted postures, right? So your 800 meter runners and your mile runners, they look a little different than your sprinters, right? Like, do their butts look different? Yes, no, yeah, right? And so a lot of your endurance athletes will end up, well, I call this front wheel drive. So they kind of pull themselves along, right? So whereas a sprinter is almost always going to push themselves along, right? And so these people who pull themselves along, they tend to have tight hamstrings. Their pelvis sits posteriorly rotated. So they're, the origin and the insertion of the hamstrings are closer to each other, and so they live in this shortened position, and then when they sit like this, and they don't sit on their sit bones. Anyway, long story short is they can't pick things up from the ground because their hamstrings aren't long enough, and they don't know how to orient their pelvis. So they pick things up like you and I do, like this, right? But the problem is that when you do that athletically or when you try and lift something heavy, you need to have your spine locked into extension. And so you need to bend here, but you... Let's see. All right, back on. You can't do that if your hamstrings aren't long enough to let your pelvis tip you over. That makes sense? And so these folks are at a big risk for disc herniation. So these are the people that actually do well laying on their stomach or laying on their elbows or doing the yoga pose where I call them press ups, but downward dog and upward dog and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, you can start, these are all good places to start because the spine's in neutral, so it works for both groups. This group, especially in the acute phases, that works really well. The McKenzie progressions, because it establishes lumbar extension. What it doesn't do is push the disc herniation back in. That's the story I was told in school. That's not true. But repeated movements do increase disc water content, which is thought to be associated with pain relief. So movement is good. Let's see here. Can you progress my slides? Or is it? Oh, there we go. All right, so this is, and I'll post this. This is from a Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy article. And these are the classifications that help guide physical therapists, because what we were doing, where we were kind of willy-nilly applying good treatment ideas, but to the wrong kind of patient type. So this helps us align, get that alignment. So manipulation, there are definitely some people that benefit from manipulation. They tend to have acute low back pain, which kind of fits with athletic trainers, right? A lot of people are going to come in, or they at least have the opportunity to come in with back pain that occurred in the last 2 weeks. And if they don't have pain down past their knee, those people tend to benefit from spinal manipulation, whether you do it, a PT does it, a chiropractor does it. Spinal stabilization tends to be your really flexible kids. So you lift their leg up to do a straight leg raise and it goes to 90 degrees and they don't feel a stretch. Tend to be your gymnasts, your young females that are extremely flexible. If you can keep their spine somewhat in neutral and do planks and progress to things like overhead squats, they tend to do quite well. And then We've talked about the extension bias category tends to be our folks with discogenic issues, and they have the flat back and the butt that's tucked under. Our flexion category tends to be the people at risk for spondylolisthesis, and they tend to have a big lordosis. Lateral shift, it's just a not fun thing. These people can get better, but they're literally going to walk in, and they're going to be shifted to the side. And there's nothing that they can do to right themselves. It's an avoidance pattern because of the pain from the disc and or the pain going down their leg. And very, very few people need traction, okay? Traction may be beneficial for somebody with a disc injury with a lateral shift, but most people can get better without it. So if you don't have a traction table, which I figure most of you probably don't, you're not missing out on a lot. So, all right, let's see. All right, we're going to keep it short because we're going to kind of try and get back onto schedule. But muscle strains, they do happen in sports. They're going to be associated with, right, inherently if it's a muscle strain, it'll be pain when you put that muscle on a stretch and pain when that muscle contracts. So you think a quarterback or a baseball player might end up with an oblique injury. To be honest, I don't see tons and tons of true muscle strains in the clinic. They do happen, and they're more common in sports than in the everyday population. Facet joint injuries tend to have what we call a typical pattern of pain and limitation. So if I've been backwards and I say, ow, it hurts right here, and then I side bend to that side and it hurts there, then it might be actually a facet joint issue, and those people do really well with spinal manipulation or mobilization. Basically, we need to prepare the spine for two types of stiffness. We need to be able to make it super stiff so that it can theoretically handle unexpected blows or contact with other individuals or with objects. But then there's times in sport when we need to make the spine a slinky. It's basically the spine is meant to store energy and the muscles in them for activities that connect the upper and the lower body. And so golf is a great one where you need to literally have those muscles letting you spin and torque your body up to this maximal degree and store that energy and then release it all at impact of the ball. And so the spine's a pretty amazing structure. We'll talk about that a little more in the breakout session because I have tons of... So there's the manipulation. Let me just at least share this with you. If you give manipulation to people who don't have pain down their leg, past the knee, and they don't have pain, like their pain is more acute, less than 16 days, if they just simply fit those two rules, this is the group that met those rules and received manipulation. And they do dramatically better in a week's time, and they keep that gain over the course of 6 months. So, all right. With that said, I'll step aside, but in the breakout session, we're going to talk about different phases of rehab, and I'll answer questions, and we'll talk about concepts and ways to apply that if they're lordotic or if they're or if they've got a flat back, kind of what are some things we can do in the training room to move these guys forward towards return to sport. Thanks for your time.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. I don't want to miss out the opportunity to tell you about sportshealth.com/SMB, where you can win a $50 gift certificate from Sports Health. So sportshealth.com/SMB, check them out. Make sure you listen, get the code. So the code for October will be Gideon, G-I-D-E-O-N. Gideon, G-I-D-E-O-N. That's the name of my third son. So using my family for the offer codes for the first 3 months with our deal with sportshealth.com. Again, Jeremy Jackson, Sports Medicine Broadcast. Some of these episodes are coming from SWATA, which is a conference for District 6 of the NATA. Some of them come from the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update, and some are coming from other workshops and whatnot we did throughout the summer. Check it out. Let me know what you want to hear, and we'll work on it throughout the school year. Thanks.